mouth.
Word of 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 mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, one of the world's foremost experts on, wait for it, parking. She talks about the real costs of free curb space. And the Swedish government models good behavior against bullying. But first, the spongy, soft universe of white bread.
It's scientifically true. 8 slices of Wonder Bread contain as much iron as in 3 lamb chops. Sammy's mother sure likes Wonder Bread. It's so fresh. Always buy Wonder Bread. You'll be glad you did.
For most of the 20th century, Americans got between a quarter and a half of their daily calories from these uniform loaves of factory-baked white bread. It was the dough of democratic equality and of industrial progress, a superfood for a great society. A new book called White Bread, A Social History of the Store-Bought Loaf, traces the manufacture, marketing, and meaning of white bread in the American meal and mind. Aaron Babro Strain teaches politics at Whitman University in Washington. In addition to the new book, an article chronicling Aaron's attempt to bake his own version of the 1950s-era loaf at home appears in Believer magazine. Aaron, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, Virginia. Thanks for having me on.
Well, America does have this kind of love-hate history with factory-baked white bread. It was this superfood that became kind of white trash food, or a symbol of progress that then became a symbol of decay. So I'm wondering what you discovered about these kind of dueling visions of white bread.
Yeah, I think the ultimate thing that I discovered is that 150 years of battling over bread is not just about taste or health or convenience. It's also really about much bigger questions about who we are as a nation, how we understand progress, how we relate to each other across our differences. Much bigger kinds of questions.
Oh, well, let's go back to the history then. Why did Americans abandon these hearty, nutty loaves of the old world for the sealed-up rectangular loaves of sliced white bread?
Yeah, it's hard to get ourselves back into the mentality of that era, I think. And, of course, it's a complicated, long story, but I think there's really two pieces of that. One speaks to anxieties of the early 20th century. We're talking about the 1900s, the 1910s, which is when Americans really started en masse to switch to bread from shining distant factories instead of baking it at home or getting it from small local bakeries. And partially, there was a lot of anxiety in that moment about food purity. Is our food safe? And this is the most important food that people are eating on a daily basis. So there's a lot of anxiety about bread. And that gets mixed with racial anxieties about immigration at the early part of the 20th century. You've got all of these new immigrants coming into the country, and they're primarily the people who are baking bread in shops. So there's a lot of fears about contaminated bread. And the shining, modern, gleaming bakery factory becomes a way of resolving that anxiety. You know it's clean because it's untouched by human hands. That was the early slogan that the bakers used. And the second piece of it is that the loaves themselves were really engineered to look like pieces of modern art. They were streamlined and made sleek. They were kind of like the Zephyr train of food.
Mm. Let's look at a watershed project in the evolution of white bread in America you were talking about in the early part of the 20th century. Later on, the Rockford Project, which you called the Manhattan Project of Bread. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I call it the Manhattan Project of Bread with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, but it's actually an appropriate label because a lot of the success of white bread, industrial white bread in the 1940s and 50s is tied up in war and the Cold War. But this project came about in the mid-50s. It was a multi-year, multi-experiment attempt to understand everything the government could about America's white bread habits and white bread tastes with the goal of engineering the perfect loaf of white bread. It was kind of like Mad Men meets mad scientist.
And after a couple of years of study, what emerged? Fluffier and sweeter. That's what people seem to want.
That's right. The final result, after more, almost 100,000 slices and thousands of families testing different formulas, was about 43% fluffier than the standard bread of the day and 250% sweeter.
So this is the loaf that you tried to replicate in where you were then living, a town in Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. Mexico, of all places? How'd that happen?
Yeah, it's a long story, but I was living in Mexico trying to finish up the white bread book, and I just got stuck on this idea. Is it possible? I had been writing so much about industrial bread, and I'm a kind of geeky amateur baker. And, is it possible to recreate this? I was pretty skeptical. But it turned out that in my research, I had come across this set of instructions, or reference to this set of instructions that came out of this Rockford project that you mentioned, the Manhattan Project of Bread. And a great librarian at Whitman, where I teach, was able to track this down. And sure enough, it had very detailed instructions for how to produced the loaf of bread, which was called USDA White Pan Loaf Number 1.
Except for one missing ingredient that you were looking for.
Yeah, all of the ingredients were pretty standard household items, white flour, non-fat milk solids, salt, sugar, things like that. But the final recipe was a very small percentage of yeast food. And yeah, exactly. What's a yeast food? I knew that kind of yeast ate sugars. I vaguely had that scientific idea, but I did a little research, and it turns out that yeast foods is actually a class of enzymes and salts, and the name's a little bit of a misnomer. They don't really feed yeast so much as they allow yeast to create an environment where yeast can eat faster, longer, and more effectively. And it's all really aimed at achieving the cardinal goals of industrial baking, which is faster, higher, stronger loaves of bread.
I'm speaking with Aaron Bob Rostrain, the author of the new book, White Bread. And he's also read an article in Believer magazine called Atomic Bread Baking at Home, where he details trying to replicate this USDA number one loaf. Well, you find that there was a lot of energy spent on the process, of course, of making fermentation faster. And this idea of softness, which people seem to want psychologically, but not necessarily want to taste. This is where the strain comes. The factory white bread came to symbolize something much larger, right? It became a sort of barometer of which class you were from.
Absolutely. White bread, factory white bread, certainly in the very early part of the 20th century, was very much associated with class status and notions of responsibility. In the early 20th century, mothers in particular were getting lots of messages from experts, from the media, from medicine, from public health, that they had to make responsible choices about feeding their children. And if they didn't, they were a threat to the nation. They were a threat to their children and the nation. And one of those messages was, you have to pick the right bread.
And in the build-up to the war also, that it's a patriotic duty of every American to eat enriched white bread.
Right. So that happens because at the end of the Depression, as the war is building up on the horizon, U.S. government experts were terrified because at that point a lot of critics had been gaining traction. Critics of white bread had been gaining traction, really pointing out its nutritional lacks. And there was a strong sense among consumers in the 30s that maybe white bread isn't so great after all. And war planners were really worried about this. There's this great set of exchanges where these war planner experts are talking about how, well, the Russians eat rye bread and the Germans eat dark bread, but look at the French. They eat fluffy white bread and they fold it. What's going to happen to us? And so to save the country, presumably, and make it ready to fight, they decide to synthetically enrich bread, add synthetic vitamins to bread, which is a fairly democratic way to get vitamins to every single American at almost every meal at a time when, because of the Depression, the country was living a nutritional nightmare.
I guess the French always suffer at wartime, don't they? But so let's wrap here. It's such a fascinating book, and of course the subtitle is A Social History. So what are we really talking about when we're talking about the ongoing ups and downs of white bread? I mean, we're told, oh, you shouldn't be eating this stuff. You have a terrific quote. Is it from Diana Vreeland, editor of Vogue, who says, what does she say? I'm sorry.
She says, people who eat white bread have no dreams.
Exactly. So why does white bread, how does it come to symbolize so much about either a thwarted self or an ambitious American self?
Yeah, I think that a big part of it has to do with the efforts of well-meaning food reformers. In many ways, this is a book about bread, but it's also really a book about all the food gurus and diet experts and government officials and ordinary folks who thought that, you know, if they could just get Americans to choose the right bread or avoid the wrong bread, it would somehow save the nation. And I think what I learned in the end was that when food reformers focus so much on individual food choices as a way to change the world, two things end up happening. One is they tend to miss the root causes of what's really going on. What are the problems in our food system? And two, what you're referring to, even the most well-meaning reformers often end up reinforcing social divides between, you know, the supposedly virtuous us who makes the right decisions about food, and then the problematic, scary them that can't seem to make the right decisions about food.
Well, Aaron, thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Aaron Bob Rostrain, professor of politics at Whitman College in Washington. He's also author of the new book, White Bread, A Social History of the Store-Bought Loaf. He also wrote an article called Atomic Bread Baking at Home, which appears in Believer magazine, and we have links to both at wordofmouthradio.org. Coming up, new ideas for solving a problem we can all relate to, parking. That's when Word of Mouth continues.